And the title is Raising Your Hand in Front of God. Santosh Didi, one of the sisters, the seniors in Russia, was sharing an image. She was saying, imagine 6.5 billion birds on the ground because their wings have been cut. Not damaged, but cut. 6.5 billion birds all over the earth. Imagine the blood. Cut wings. And God coming into exactly that kind of scene. Because he has told us, you, as my children, have wings. You're not human. You are angels. But your wings have been cut. So God coming into exactly such a scene and saying, children, I guarantee you that I will fix your wings and you will fly home with me. It's a nice image, isn't it? So within that context, I'd like to invite everyone to just reflect on what does it mean to raise my hand in front of God? Within the context of that image, what does it mean to you to raise my hand in front of God? You know, like we do in Murli's. Avyak Murli's, right? He tells us something and he says, those of you who are going to do this, raise your hand. So what does it mean to me within that context? So, thank you. We're just thinking about it. Quiet reflection. Okay, so before we share, I'd like to share with you this little video we have on this subject. So I don't know if I'm supposed to turn something on here. Brother Deo is there? Great. So how do we turn it on? And am I in the way? Can people see? I think this chair might be in the way for some people. to raise my hand in front of Baba. What does it mean to raise the hand of my mind in front of Baba? Someone who's done this, what does he or she look like? All our seniors became great because they've done this, and they meant it. Have I really raised my hand, both physical and mental, in front of Baba? Those who feel that the Father said something, that it's the Father's duty to have an aim, and that the children's duty is to definitely do what the Father has asked, raise your hand. Constantly happy. The Father is their world. Raise your hand. As you finish your sanskaras, you will become equal to the Father in the same way Become master bestowers, children of the bestower, and definitely serve them with your mind. It's your right to achieve victory, finish the past, put a full stop. You have raised your hands, haven't you? Let the past be the past. Will you demonstrate it by claiming number one? Revelation will take place through the Father and the activity of each of you. You have to promise the Father. You're doing that, but the voice should echo in everyone's ears. God has come, our Father has come. Raise your hands to show that it has to happen. Carefree emperors, raise your hands. Bhaktada is giving you blessings again and again. Have I really raised my hand? I must have seen that video at least 24 times. Each time I see something different. Did you enjoy that? Yeah? Okay, so 2 questions to begin our workshop properly. Number one, Baba calls the cycle a drama. And so if this drama were a book, and the book has many different chapters in it, one chapter would be where you are at on your journey now. You've just finished a Madhuban trip, you're finishing up a Madhuban trip, going to go back to your countries to finish all your karmic accounts, to bring the message, to serve, uplift. So, if one of those chapters was the description of your journey at this point in your life, what would be the name of this chapter? Do you follow that? What would be the name of this chapter? Your life at this point in the cycle. Another way of saying this is, take a few minutes, sit back, think about your Madhuban experience, and for you personally, what's it all about at this point in time? That would be the title of this chapter in the drama of life. Is that clear? Any questions about that? Okay, second question is, what does it mean to you to raise your hand in front of God? Okay, a few minutes for this.
Another mic, maybe. Or no, we can take that mic. It's okay.
Okay, Om Shanti. So, what's it all about for you at this point in your journey? What's it all about? Yeah. If the drama were a book and one of the chapters was your own personal journey at this point in time, what would be the title of that chapter? Same thing, right? First question, what's it all about? What's the title of that chapter? And so secondly, what does it mean to you to raise your hand in front of God? Would anybody like to share? I heard some wonderful things discussing with Morni. I also was able to articulate, identify some important things. Anybody like to share? We have a mic here. You don't have to share the whole chapter. In fact, please don't share the whole chapter. But, you know, a highlight. What's the title? Yes, brother, please come. Ah, we have a sister too, yes. Break the ice, yes. What's your name? Where are you from?
Yeah. Yes, yes, okay. My name is Dusha, and
where are you
spiritual
from?
Birth.
Where are you from?
Yeah, spiritual sorry. Birth, London, UK. Uh-huh. But physical birth, is that important?
No. As you like.
Yeah. Okay, physical birth, Yugoslavia.
Oh.
It doesn't exist anymore, but it helps me explain how origin can also change. Two classes that we teach. Okay, so the answer to my first question would be, the name of the chapter would be, every moment in this drama is serendipity.
Every moment is?
In this drama is serendipity.
Is serendipity. Okay, what does that mean? It's a big word.
Okay, so in the worldly, everyday language, serendipity means when something happens and you know, you're aware that, oh, this is exactly what I wanted to happen, the right time and right place. It's the best thing I could imagine that happened just now. But that is when we are aware in the everyday language. But believing, having faith that everything that happens in this drama is serendipity in advance, even when it's less obvious, yeah, just that faith that every moment or every event in this drama is serendipity.
So that's what it's all about for our sister Dusha. That's the title of her chapter. Thank you. Yes. Did you want to share anything else? What it means to raise your hand?
Yeah. The second question is, what does it mean when I raise my hand in Mother Baba? I think that is an expression of my faith that I am really perfect, as Baba says, that I'm becoming it.
Don't you think we should applaud that? That sounds pretty good.
Thank you.
Yes. It's an expression of my faith that I really am perfect. That's what she was saying. Yes, brother, you wanted to share?
Here, so.
Not the whole chapter, right? Just the title.
The title is as big as the chapter.
Okay.
But it's not so big. 1 minute. Sorry, it's taking a little time. What does it mean? No. The title of the chapter of your book, which is at this particular stage in your journey, I somehow felt like picking out something from what I read long, long ago from a saying by Robert Frost. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and many miles to go before I sleep. Means I have a lot of things to achieve, and time is short, and I'm struggling to see how best I can. That's not the title, but the...
Long title, but we get the point. Thank you, yes.
And the second part is, what does raising your hand, my hand, in front of Baba mean to me? Make the change now.
Sounds good.
If you don't do it now... going to be never.
Nice. Yes, thank you. Anyone else? There's time for one more. Yes, sister's coming and a brother. So good. Last two. Because we have more work to do in this workshop. What's your name and where are you from?
Om Shanti. I'm Prabha from Thailand. Regarding to the question number one, what is the name of this chapter? I think it's the last chapter, and it is a world transformation through self transformation.
Sounds nice. Sounds like a good chapter.
I have to change. I have to become a fast effort maker. So that the world can change. The second question, when I rest my hand in front of Baba, it means that I make commitment, I make the promise that I will become that. I will become that. I will do it now.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Thank you. And brother, there was one more? Yes.
Om Shanti. I'm Ram Kumar from Leicester, UK. And regarding the first thing, the title of the chapter, it's Emerging Point. That's what came into my mind.
Say that again.
Emerging Point.
Emerging Point.
Like when we come to Madhuban at this time, especially this meet, I feel like there is a lot of plans and things which I have to do and become a good instrument. So, and again, coming back to what does it mean to raise hand to Baba? It is becoming a perfect instrument to Baba. It's like Baba is doing everything, and once we are committed to be a good instrument, Baba is going to use us and make us do. So just becoming that complete instrument, that's the conscious.
Very nice. Very nice. Bravo. Okay, so Before we start our second part, I would just like to share with you my thoughts about this, and also we'll have a chance to listen to Morni Ben, who I invited into this session. I was thinking that what it means, or rather I should say, the chapter that I'm in right now is, the title would be The Partnership and Never to Be Alone Again. And what it means to me to raise my hand in front of Baba is really just that. To reach for him. Reach for him. Because it does seem, doesn't it, that we do forget the newness of the Confluence Age. And we keep going at life alone. How long does it take us? You can just check this. Before I remember to ask myself when I'm in front of a challenge or an old sanskar or someone else's old sanskar, I wonder what Baba would do here. Or Baba, we're in this together. I know the sanskar that I want here. Let's go. Let's do it. This is the partnership that's being offered us in the Confluence Age. I do feel that raising my hand like that, reaching for him, remembering that I'm not going to go it alone anymore. This is a step of courage. This is why many times Baba says, good, you've raised your hand, you have the courage. But I also feel like some of you have said, it's a kind of promise, kind of commitment. And yet, promise to? Who am I promising to? What am I promising to? It occurs to me that a much more powerful commitment, because it's so much more personal, is to make my promise to truth. Make my promise to my highest truth. Again and again. Because we are getting tired of sailing our own truth, aren't we? And Baba has come for this. So that I can stop failing that truth and become victorious. Carry that flag and win for the side of truth. Today's Murli was incredible, actually, on that issue. He's saying, children, you don't have to ask for anything anymore. You have come here in order to receive. All you have to do, he was saying, all you have to do is follow Srimad. And essentially everything that is mine, you will experience it as yours. So, Srimad. It's not that Baba is that kind of authority. He just loves to create rules and then punish us if we don't follow the rules. He likes to boss us around, tell us what to do. That's not Srimad, and that's not the kind of authority that Baba works with. Exactly as per the Murli today, Baba's authority is an authority of a totally new kind. It's very loveful. It's very humble. It's his love that he tells us, don't think like this, don't speak like that, don't act like this or that. Instead, do it this way. Do it the way I do it. Because as much as we come into true thoughts, true words, true actions, we jump the wavelength of falsehood, which is the human energy level, and we enter his wavelength. To be in his wavelength because of a true thought, a true word, a true feeling, a true behavior, means to be on the same wavelength as God, everything he has. Literally, I can experience it as mine. This is what we were talking about yesterday. I might feel, going into a conversation with somebody who's challenging me, there's difficulties, we've decided we're going to have a conversation, I might feel going into that conversation that I don't have enough respect. How is this going to work? But I reach for Baba. I claim that inheritance, my rights from the partnership. We go in together, and as I was sharing yesterday, it's just amazing. The feelings of respect, the energy of respect, everything that I need to be there, it's there, thanks to him. So it means determination to raise my hand. But what does determination mean? My favorite translation of that word, my favorite definition, you might have heard me say this before, that it comes from Dadi Gozar. Determination. Baba doesn't stop speaking about it. Raise your hand, but with determination. Make that promise, but from the heart, with determination. Right? Here's the best definition. What I was, I will be again. Dadi Gozar's definition of determination. As I was, so I will be again. So I'm raising my hand. Yes, Baba. I've understood. I agree. I'm signing up. It is now the time for me to be as I was. So practically speaking, what does it mean? Look at all the homework he's told us, he's given us over the season, and do it. Come into Amritvela prepared. Know the defect. Understand the virtue. Draw it from him during Amritvela. But then, like he was saying, throughout the whole day, check it. Check it. Claim your rights of our partnership. Draw it. Be it. Practice true being. Practice true being. Like that. So these are wonderful words, and they're very elevated words, and it's an amazing thing. We are those six, and we are those birds, air children, firstborn birds whose wings have been cut. God has come for me to fix those wings. Everything we've said, all the classes you've heard, are really all about this. Letting him fix my wings and flying. Now, the world is waiting for the angels. So in this last part of the workshop, I'd like to take another few minutes to just reflect. You've heard so many classes. There have been inspirations, new enthusiasms. But maybe there's some gray areas. Maybe there's a question. Maybe there's some confusion, because it's so big what we're really after here. So in this last part of the workshop, open forum to ask whatever question you'd like. And we have Morni, who's going to join us, a wonderful sister of 37 years in Gyan, 37 years in Gyan with an incredible history behind her of service in so many different countries. So, very good authority to help us look at some answers. Okay? A few minutes. Reflect. You've understood what it's all about for you. Now clarify, before you leave for your country, any last questions, doubts, confusions. Best thing is if you write out your question, clear, big letters and hand it up here, okay? Could I ask you to sit here, and if anybody has any questions on paper, they can just be passing it up to Talia, who will hand it to us. You all decided what's it all about for you. You gave a title to that chapter. What's going to challenge that? Any questions about how you're going to work with those challenges? Okay, so while you're thinking, while you're writing up your questions, I'd like to ask Morni to share a little bit of herself in terms of what does it mean to you to raise your hand in front of God, and for you, what's it all about, and what's the greatest challenge you feel you face?
So about raising the hand, for me, it's not to waste Baba's time, because I feel quite embarrassed if Baba has to tell me the same thing again. And I remember I was sharing that very early on in a personal meeting with Baba,
Talia, you can hand him directly.
After listening to the Dadis, that it's impossible for me to come in the eight. I mean, those days were only a few hundred, so we're thinking in those kind of... So I was thinking it's impossible, and I met Baba, and he said, which rosary are you in? And then he asked me again. Then he asked me again. So the third time I said, is it really possible to come in the rosary of eight? And then he said, last so fast, fast is first, so you race ahead and be the example. And then I decided again in Madhavan, it's impossible. Then when I met Baba, he shook my hand and he said, you're in the line of worthy ones. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to think that again. You're not going to have to tell me a third time. So for me, it's this, you know, not wasting Baba's time. If he's told me once, I should listen, and that's it.
I just want to add something there. One of my favorite expressions from one of our brothers is this. If you think you're going to fail, you're right. Get it? I mean, the amount of power that's in my thought. And whatever is my number is so much related to what do I think my number is and want my number to be. Amazing how much it's in my hands, and the seed is the energy of thought. Yeah. If you think you're going to fail, you're right.
And for the topic of this chapter, it's being available. Because I'm moving on from, I mean, the future of power. I've been working in India for 4 years, but that's changing. So I'm available for more of that or anything else. And somebody said that to surrender is simply to be available. Sometimes surrender sounds so big, but actually it's to be available. So That's my chapter at the moment. But what I like very much is this definition of determined, determination, because actually that definition Daddy gave, it is determined, you know, to return back to what I was. It's destined anyway, isn't it? It can't be anything else. So it's a wonderful definition.
So now the questions are coming. Let's take a look at some of them. First of all, how do we express sincere care and yet remain detached?
Jagdish Pai gave a very good class on the balance of love and law. And he said, it's not a matter of love sometimes and law other times, but we must always love according to the law. So I think this is the answer to that, to really think about what are the laws of love, because being possessive, worrying, being attached, they're not the laws of love. So I think if we apply the laws of love, but that takes a bit of thinking, what are they?
That takes a lot of thinking, the laws of love. It's very nice, because I do think that one of those laws would be to detach. In other words, I was thinking with this question, why is it that a doctor is never allowed to operate on his own family? It's because there's the concern that the emotions of the relationship will interfere with the work that has to be done. Cutting into the skin, blood, you know. So detachment is the detachment of a nurse, a doctor, who is there to benefit, there to help, there to make everything better, but is so removed from anything happening on the gross level in order to be able to do the service. So I think that has something to do with the law of love, because this is true love. You've got to get in there and do the surgery. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
How do we remember, or how do we use Baba in a practical way while we solve some challenging task? Solve? Is that the word? Mm-hmm. Solve? I think so. What's the mechanism for getting God's power?
This is the whole study, I think, of yoga, because you know, I remember some time ago, someone went in Baba's room and then they came out and I said, how was that? And they said, I didn't get my answer. And I said, what did you do? They said, I have a problem. I went in and I talked to Baba about it. I said, that sounds like worry to me.
And complaint.
Because really yoga and this whole thing of meditation is to transcend. So if we take the problem to Baba, it's not transcending it. And I think the whole thing is to go beyond it so that we can be above it all. And then we take power and we take inspiration. We get these touchings and then it's very clear. But sometimes we confuse, you know, worry and meditation. We think we'll get our answers from Baba by talking to Baba about the problem.
I know that on a very practical level, moving along the same lines as Morni, the important thing is to get myself situated in an energy which is beyond the problem first. That's the first aspect of the mechanism for getting God's power. I have to jump the orbit, as I was saying, of human emotion and come into his wavelength. And practically speaking, what I have seen, when there's really a big problem, I just sit down with pen and paper and I write down if there's anything that I have to do. Is there anything that has to be done? And writing it down means I'm not going to forget it, meaning I don't have to think about it. I also can give a timeline. By when does that thing have to be done? And then I decide, or then I see, does a decision have to be made by me? And if so, by when? This is all written down, so it's very clear. And if I see that whatever it is that needs to be done, it's not to be done at least, say, a week from now, then I'm already light about that. I can leave that whole energy of worry or fear or concern. If I see that a decision doesn't have to be made till, let's say, for example, 2 more days, the next thing I plan is, how much time do I feel I need to give it to be able to make that decision? If I feel within 2 days I need, say, 20 hours, it's a big problem, it's got to be worked out, it's going to take me at least 20 hours, fine. I'm going to give it 20 hours, but in 2 days, that's 48 hours. So I then make a commitment not to think about it for the other 28 hours. It means I decide from 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock today and tomorrow, I'm going to think about it. That's my 20 hours. But after 5 o'clock today, I'm not allowed to think about it. Same for the next day. Not allowed to think about it. It means I create such a plan whereby it's justified. I've proved to myself that I have the right not to think about it at all, because that gives me the opportunity to strengthen the most important mechanism for receiving God's power, which is to be free of the problem, free of the energy of worry or fear. I'm not allowed to think about it. This is a muscle we have to exercise so much. And yet, it requires being responsible in front of the problem, such as the two first items I was mentioning. Anything else about that? Okay. Another one. Could you clarify partnership? Could you clarify partnership? In this partnership with God, how much is my part and how much is Baba's?
If I could tell you a nice little story about that. Didi Manmohini, when she left the body, someone asked Baba, so did she become Karmati? Did she become perfect?
Who is Didi Manmohini?
She was the additional administrative head. So before, she left the body in 1983.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when Baba was asked, did she become perfect? Baba said, no. Not exactly, but because she always helped Baba at a time of need, I gave her a scholarship. I just loved that because I thought, all I have to do is do my best. And then Baba will see that. And if he needs to fill in something, if I've honestly done my best, he's going to fix the rest. That has made me so light in my Brahman life. I just feel I can do my best. I have to do my best. But he'll fix the rest. He'll give me a scholarship. So it's, and it's also a balance, my effort and Baba's help. Sometimes I make too much effort, and sometimes I rely too much on Baba. And there's three energies in this cosmos, mine, Baba's, and Drama's. So Drama also has a thing going on. So I have to find the sweet point in those three circles that meet, that little point that's just at the right balance of my effort, Baba's help, and being stable on Drama. And when I can get to that point, I just feel, if I can stay in that point, it's like magical.
Very nice. And this gives me a good opportunity to introduce Sister Morney. 37 years in Gyan, as I was saying, with fantastic experiences of service starting in Hong Kong. Actually, you're from Australia.
Yeah,
ended up in
Australia.
Hong Kong, serving all the different areas, Vietnam, Korea. Were you in Korea?
Yeah, helping.
Helping
mostly
in these areas.
Cambodia, Vietnam.
Back to Australia, running retreats, running big service initiatives, and for the last 4 years here in India, working with Brother Nirzar, who was the person who created Serve Africa and got the whole of the continent awakened. So he brought that kind of a spirit to India, to serve India, with a project called Future of Power. And Morni is his right hand.
And actually, my name comes from Didi Manmohini.
Her name comes from Didi
Manmohini.
So
Daddy Jenki calls me Didi's Morni. Because Morni actually means Mo is peacock. Morni is peahen. So my name is peahen. So Daddy Jenki's affectionately called me Didi's Morni, Didi's peacock, peahen, which I like very much. Didi's peahen.
Her specialty is all these stories. She has so many stories to share by way of giving answers to our questions. So I appreciate that. One more question. It feels like I'm remembering Baba from the head and not from the heart. And so here is where I have to make effort. Because if I were to remember from the heart, I'm sure I wouldn't have to make any more effort. Is that right? Yoga would become natural and easy, wouldn't it?
There's one particular Muli, I'm sorry I don't know the exact date, but it was about a clever head and a clean heart. I think it's 80s. But Baba was saying in that, you know, some have a clever head and some have a clean heart. Those with a clever head, they use their head. So in other words, they're using their capabilities there. But those with a clean heart, Baba can work through them. So actually everything's done from Baba rather than yourself. You know, so if you can find that Muli, it's very good. And Ramesh Bhai, who was topped the whole of the country in the Chartered Accountants, he got the top. He had a little problem with the accounts, and he showed Dadi Prakash money, and within minutes she just pointed it out like this. I mean, that is really a clean heart rather than a clever head. You know, so yeah, the power of the clean heart rather than the clever head. But it's also, I think, yoga's that, the practice of meditation's that balance of the head and the heart. And so there's a lot of stories around that. But to me, it's, you know, checking that I'm in balance. Because sometimes I can just go along with my head and think all is fine. But then the heart's not working and I'm getting stressed, actually, because when I'm using my head, I get stressed. And when I'm down in my heart, I never get stressed.
So how do we make this journey, longest journey that exists, from the head to the heart?
I think it's deciding what's needed, you know, really seeing what do I need, what am I balanced, what do I need, and then working on that side. And when I recognize this, when I got stressed once, I saw, I need to feel Baba as I need to feel I'm a child of God. And normally that was quite easy for me. That wasn't a difficult one. But I noticed at that time, I couldn't feel like a child. I was stuck up here. I could be powerful. I could churn. I could do all the things with the head. But I couldn't get this feeling of being a child. So every time I sat for meditation, I just sat with that intention to be the child. And it took me about 24 hours, which I was surprised, because that was normally one of the easiest. But once I felt that I was the child, that was fine. Everything just, I got more busy. There should have been more stress, but there was none because I brought myself down to this heart space.
Here's another question. A soul is mind, intellect, and sanskaras. Where's the head in that? And where's the heart?
Yeah, so, I mean, normally we talk about, you know, the intellect as being the head. normally. But all of these, and the heart is more the feelings, but even these faculties have subtle aspects to them. You know, like they talk about the intuition as connected to the intellect. Now, what's intuition? That's not very head, is it? It's like the heart of the head. It's the heart of the intellect. You know, and even in the mind or in the sanskars, we talk about the chit, which is the memory track, but others translate it as, well, not really memory track, as it's all almost like heart. You know, Chit Chaw, there was that movie, you know, everybody tells me about. It was very much about the heart. So Chit Chaw, you know, the chit as being... So, you know, all of these aspects even have the subtle aspects that all seem to come, the more refined and the pure and divine, all of these mind, intellect, sanskars also have their heart. So, I don't know if that answers the question, but it's finding the heart in all of these anyway.
What is the heart?
The core, the pulse, you know, the heart is signified as this beating. And I remember in that book called Inner Space, you know, she talks about the soul as being a peace pulse. And even if you were shot, your mind would question, your intellect, your body would react, but the peace pulse wouldn't miss a beat. So the heart is the core, the unchanging part. And also in one of those books too, it was an angel book about angels written by Anthea Church as well. But she said the intellect of an angel changes, the mind of an angel changes, the personality changes, but the heart of an angel never changes. That spoke so deeply to me. Because I thought deep down, I've always been me. You know, my personality, my roles changed, but my heart has never changed. So I don't know if it's putting it in words, but putting it in feelings, that's the heart.
Listening to you, I also think that it would have to do with the word original. Because that which doesn't change is that which is true, true, eternal. Is that which is original? As if to get to the heart of the matter, we have to get back to the truth of the matter, which will always be the energies and the feelings of our original qualities, loveful, peaceful, joyful, wise, pure. And I would just, because I think the real challenge with this subject is this journey from the head to the heart. For those who are out of balance, it's usually an imbalance, too much on the side of the head and not enough in the heart. And when that is what's going on, the imbalance is the issue, what I found very helpful is just to have this practice of stopping. Stop all thought. And just go into eternity. And that might feel challenging and difficult. We might not know how to do that. But originally, truly, we do have this heart. It knows exactly what that is. We come from eternity. We come from a land of peace. We know it very well. So even traffic control can be that 1 minute practice. It's like a muscle which just develops. Stop. And just go into eternity. And in eternity, the heart is filled with that peace, with that love, with that purity. And Baba's there too. These things nurture the heart.
And I was also saying the other day that it's, you know, sometimes even in the course on this mind, intellect, sanskars, we say it's the, you know, it's the faculty, the mind, the faculty of the mind is to think. But really, it's not natural to think. You know, it's a faculty to use. But we've kind of accepted that it's quite normal that we think all the time. That's not normal at all. That's being in the head. And if you look at thought, 90%, if not more, is ego. All of that thought, that static, is coming from ego. It's not normal to think. It's normal to be. And to just think,
bravo.
When I need to.
I mean, doesn't that sound
to
great?
To think. But it's normal. And we have to realize that and then practice it.
Wonderful, wonderful. It's not normal to think. That's Daddy Jenki's song. She's always saying, I've understood your problem. You think too much. Thinking. She says it's just a bad habit.
It is. It's a bad habit.
In the Golden Age, we would not be thinking like we do here.
We wouldn't think.
We wouldn't think. Hard. We'd just be, as you were saying.
And just
wonderful
think when
point.
We need to.
I want one more question here, very practical. Could you give a word of advice on how to deal with souls who pass on their problems or their grief in their Brahman life to you? In other words, they project it on you. For example, they might have whatever kind of relationship with you, whatever kind of vision on you, and they assure you that what I'm doing to you is nothing compared to what other seniors have done to me. It means I aim just to give love and compassion, but this only seems to invite more bullying from them, more humiliating behaviors. How to deal with this?
So it doesn't sound like dumping. It's more attacking, isn't it?
Attacking.
Yeah, it's an attacking. Yeah. So, you know, I think I've come across, you know, I'm quite interested in psychology because I see the connection with meditation and actually the word psyche is soul. But this whole thing, because, you know, I also studied love for many years, and mostly love engenders this thing of being unconditional. But together with that unconditional love, we really need to balance it with boundaries. I think that's the balance for love. So there really needs to be boundaries in relationships and how much, you know, I will listen to and how much I won't and things like that. I mean, I'm not there just for being abused or being having people project onto me and things like that. I mean, to realize my own self-worth, you know, to not just be there for that. But one thing that connects back to that head and heart thing, I mean, some people are more in the heart, and that's also another problem. And I know one sister, she used to get really down and come to me as the center coordinator, you know, to bring her out of this kind of a depression. But I saw her personality over a while and got to know her, and I could see that she chooses not to use her intellect. She chooses to stay with emotions and feelings. And if you choose to stay with emotions and feelings, you are going to go up and down. There's no way out of it. If you go up, you will go down. I've decided not to stay on that journey. I've got off that track, and I, you know, choose not to be so emotional. It's my choice, and I've experienced the stability. She is choosing to stay with emotions. So then I told her, I said, if you're choosing to stay on this path, don't come to me with your downs, because it's your choice. You have chosen these ups and downs as your, it's what you are choosing. So it's not really fair in a way to come to me when you're down and ask for help, because you bring it on yourself. You've chosen that journey. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to be there when you're down. So when we can see things quite clearly, you know, then I think, you know, we can choose how much we engage. And I know Sister Little Mohini from Madhavan, she was telling me, because she used to hear a lot of the things instead of like what could have gone to Dadi. So people, even now, she's very much a person that Madhuban Nawasi's go to for counseling, for advice. But she told them, she's told everyone that I will be there for you if you think I can help. But if you don't think I can help, I'm not there just for you to vomit on. Yeah. That was the word she used.
Yeah.
I'm not there for that. I'm sorry. I'm just not there for that. If you think I can help, then, you know, you come to me. But don't just come and vomit on me. And very clear, no? Like, that's a boundary.
I do think it's a question of establishing boundaries. Sometimes at this point in time, people just need to be told about the boundaries. But I'm just remembering one class by Dadi, and we'll be finishing up with this, in which Dadi was saying, someone had told her that this person had said that, and it really hurt my feelings. And so Dadi was saying, yes, that person said that to you. It wasn't very nice. It wasn't very nice. He spoke rubbish. It's not nice that people just speak rubbish like that to you. I understand. But then she looked at this person. She said, but now tell me, what is it about you that made that person think that you are a garbage tin, that you are a rubbish bin? So this is another thing. I won't establish the boundary, but if my self-respect is such, why would they throw such stuff at me? So I thank you very much for this session. I don't know what tomorrow is going to be, or the next few days, because people are leaving in droves. Yeah, how many of you are staying until the 7th? A handful. Staying until the 5th? Uh-huh. Okay. Because there are some ideas about how we can use our time in a very worthwhile way. Really explore the whole concept of intense effort making, because we can take that home and back to our country. So stay tuned. There'll be announcements probably tomorrow, each day actually, for how we can work together to continue the good work. And I think that's about it. Anything else, Morni? Wasn't it wonderful that she could join us? And I'm glad you could all meet her. And we just take a... What? I have also found that, and I've also disagreed that that should be a chapter in my book. And with this disagreement, I have set about creating ways to come into the reality of this relationship, because we have substituted the energies of the heart with the head, possibly for many, many births. And so the muscle of the heart and tuning into the reality of trust and faith in that which cannot come to me through the physical senses, that might be so new for the soul. And my most recent exercise to really break through the theoretical existence of God in my life and really into the reality of His presence is, somewhat as we were sharing yesterday, Baba's love is incorporeal. I am not used to the reality of incorporeal being. And so to break through the habit of corporeal being, in other words, human being, I just keep this practice once an hour, once every half hour, sometimes giving myself a program of 40 minutes three times a day, an extra half hour here, an extra half hour there, but different programs in which I'm just stopping all aspects of being corporeal, coming into just the tiny dot, the soul that I am. That exercise, because it is my original truth, I am just that point of light. That exercise, I really feel, develops for me the reality through the experience of all that is incorporeal. And as a result, I find myself more and more able to see Baba, feel Baba, and begin to remember Baba. I don't know if that helps. But practically speaking, there's something to do. I have to practice being a little soul.
And if I could just add, the way I kind of check whether there is natural remembrance, has anyone ever had a worry? You know, when I don't know what it was, but I remember really only worrying once. But what I noticed is whenever you weren't busy, like fully engaged, that's where your mind went, to that worry, to that worry, to that worry. So to me, the checking that remembrance has become natural is that whenever I'm free, where does my mind go? Like just as it went to that worry, it should be going to Baba. That should fill the space in between. You know, and when I started work, you know, seeing that, it helped a lot to make remembrance natural or to check how natural it's become. So like you say, your heart goes to your beloved, you know, in a lochic sense. If you're in love with someone, you remember them whenever you're free. So in that same way, is it going to Baba in that empty space when I'm not occupied?
And if it's not, start the training of bringing it to him. Okay, Om Shanti. I think traffic control? No, we don't have 12:30 traffic control. Okay, so a few minutes just to finish. And then Deborah, is her name Deborah? I can't remember. Is it Deborah? Yes, good. Can I see you afterwards? Thank you.